Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started here. My name is Bob Rutkowski. I'm with J.P. Morgan's Healthcare Group. Thank you all for being here this morning. Just a quick housekeeping note, there will be a breakout session after this presentation in the Yorkshire Room outside the hallway and to the left. With that, it's my pleasure to introduce our next presenter, John Butler, CEO of Akebia Therapeutics.
Thanks very much, and thanks everyone for being here today. I'm just going to remind everyone that I'll be making forward-looking statements, so please refer to our SEC filings for more information. It really is exciting to be here to talk to you this morning and really introduce the new Akebia to everyone here. And it really is the new Akebia. Having closed our merger just in the middle of last month, we have now become a company that is a commercial organization focused on helping patients with kidney disease. We now have product revenue and two FDA-approved indications in markets that have substantial opportunity for growth. Over the next 18 months, starting the first half of this year, we have multiple clinical catalysts for our product development candidate that we hope will compete in a very large market opportunity. And we're doing all of that from a position of financial strength. Pro forma Q3, we had $431 million in the bank. Product revenue, significant collaboration revenue as well, and now we've updated post the merger that our cash runway will bring us into Q3 of 2020. We are driven to advance care for patients with kidney disease. It is a very, very clear mission as a company, and the need is clear as well. You know, if you look as kidneys progressively fail, you see significant increases in mortality rate. There's a great need to improve the care of patients. And this has truly become a public health challenge, both in the U.S. and globally. In the U.S., there's over 40 million patients who have kidney disease. Medicare alone spends over $100 billion to deal with the issues of kidney disease. Over $35 billion is spent on just the 500,000 patients who are on dialysis. That's almost $100,000 really per patient. So the government really is looking for ways to foster innovation to the point where the Health and Human Services has created a public-private partnership with the American Society of Nephrology called KidneyX, which is about accelerating innovation. So there's a great focus on improving care for patients with kidney disease, delaying progression to dialysis, improving their quality of life. And we think that Akebia is very well positioned, both from a portfolio perspective and an organization perspective, to take advantage of that focus on kidney disease. We are now positioned and competing in two markets for patients with kidney disease, chronic kidney disease, patients on dialysis and not on dialysis. Our commercial product, Auryxia, has two indications. In dialysis, it's indicated for hyperphosphatemia. In non-dialysis patients, for iron deficiency anemia. Our development program, vadadustat, is a hypoxia-inducible factor prolyl hydroxylase inhibitor that is in phase 3 for two patient groups as well, both those on dialysis and not on dialysis. Organizationally, we're well positioned to compete in this market as well. Our commercial organization in the U.S. is focused on seeing nephrologists and helping patients with kidney disease, but our development organization is also very unique as well. We are running for vadadustat, a clinical program of over 7,000 patients in 26 countries with 600 unique sites seeing patients with CKD. We're doing all of that from an extremely strong financial position with a number of very committed partners as well. So as we think about growing the company into the future, we think we're very well positioned in a clear space. So let me talk just a little bit before we go into detail just about the differences in this market. You say CKD on dialysis, not on dialysis. That sounds very similar, but they're really very unique markets from a commercial perspective. Certainly from a clinical perspective, you're looking to lower cardiovascular risk, improve quality of life, and non-dialysis, delay the onset of end-stage renal failure. But when you think about the commercial opportunity, you really have to understand the differences. In dialysis, patients are treated. You're presented for dialysis. You go on dialysis three times a week, generally in a dialysis center. Non-dialysis is a very different market. This is an area where it's a much larger patient population, but many fewer patients are actually treated or treated adequately. So when you think about this from a how we approach the market perspective, when we're talking about dialysis, we're really talking about taking share. You know, patients are treated, though not necessarily treated appropriately or ideally. And, you know, we believe we have offerings that can change that today and hopefully in the future. Whereas we think about the non-dialysis market, we think about growing that market, having more patients be treated or treated adequately. Similarly, there's a difference in how you think about getting products paid for. And in the non-dialysis market, it's a more traditional payer environment for oral drugs. But in dialysis, you really have to be cognizant of the bundle that CMS has for CKD dialysis patients. And CMS is Medicare is the primary payer for patients on dialysis. So understanding that bundle payment. Many of the drugs we're talking about are part of the bundle today, and by 2025, even all of the oral drugs will be included as part of the bundle. So with that, we're going to look at each of those markets and how Akebia is competing today and will compete in the future. And we'll start with CKD on dialysis. And we'll first start by talking about our commercial product, Auryxia. The growth rate for Auryxia is clear. From 2017 to 18, latest data is November, we saw 91% growth in prescriptions. Clear growth for the product. We like the trajectory that it's on. Market share has grown as well to 6.5% or 6.4% in the last 18 months. But you see that there's significant room left to grow, and we think there are significant opportunities to grow this product. You know, we have a commercial organization that, you know, given that the merger closed in the middle of December, we're getting to know, but I'm very impressed by the group that we have, and we think we're very well positioned to deal with some of the headwinds that we have in the market today, like CMS coverage, where we now have to have a prior authorization for Part D patients physicians have to work through. Our sales force is helping physicians work through that. And we believe we can change that coverage decision as well. A more short-term issue where DaVita Rx has discontinued their specialty pharma business, and we have to recognize, find those patients, and make sure they stay on drug. We think that's really washed itself out at the end of last year, and we can move forward from there. And, of course, integration of a merger always creates distraction, and we're working hard to keep our commercial organization focused on growing Auryxia. And they're very focused on the opportunities that we have, the tailwinds that we have, including guideline changes for hyperphosphatemia, which we think presents a very significant opportunity. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the competitive profile that we have for the product. There is significant room to grow in this market. And with one of the leading products going generic and Sanofi having their sales force, you know, getting rid of their sales force in renal, it creates an opportunity for a much larger share of voice as well, and we'll talk about that. And I think you see that reflected here on the graph on the left. This is looking at absolute change in phosphate binder prescriptions from 2017 to 2018. And, you know, there was a belief out there that with Renvela becoming a generic product, that would be a negative for Auryxia. And, of course, quite the opposite happened. Auryxia had the largest growth rate in absolute numbers of prescriptions from 2017 to 2018, and that really is a reflection of the detail sensitivity of the product and the needs in the market. And let's talk about those needs a little bit. Let's start from the bottom up here, the last three bullets. If you look at less pill burden, favorable tolerability profile, a palatable formulation, these are all needs in the market that have to do with getting the patient to take their drugs. You know, phosphate binders, when you think about dialysis patients, on average they're taking 8 or 9 different meds. And with phosphate binders, you have rather large pills. You have to take multiple pills every time you have a meal. So compliance is difficult with this patient population. So the way nephrologists think about it is it only works if the patient will take it. And so issues like tolerability and pill burden are incredibly important to drive utilization of a product. Now, non-calcium is different. Non-calcium is about safety. You know, it has been clearly demonstrated now that absorbing calcium from your calcium phosphate binders increases calcification and drives increased cardiovascular risk. So that's a safety issue. And that's one we really think is a huge opportunity for us to take advantage of. If you look at the graph on the left, the DOPS data from 2017 showed that over 40% of patients were prescribed calcium-based phosphate binders, over 50% if you include patients who were prescribed combination therapy with sevelamer. At the end of 17, KDIGO, who controls the treatment guidelines for kidney disease, put out a guidance to saying in adult patients with CKD, you should limit the use of calcium-based phosphate binders. And what that's translated into is more than half of nephrologists recognizing they need to use a calcium-based phosphate binder in fewer of their patients. And we're starting to see that reflected in prescription data. You saw the decrease in calcium binder use last year. We expect that to continue to accelerate in 2019, particularly with the focus of our Auryxia sales organization. But then there are the issues of tolerability and pill burden. Sevelamer continues to be the market leader. About 50% of the prescriptions are written for sevelamer. But 20% of those patients who start on sevelamer discontinue the drug. Why? The things we've heard. Pill burden, tolerability. Well, we presented real-world data with Auryxia to show that the pill burden for Auryxia versus sevelamer is lower. That's important for physicians. And those tolerability issues, again, speak to giving physicians an option to try something different in their patient. And you see this external research in the middle shows that the drug that physicians are looking to increase the most in 2019 is Auryxia. We need to harness that and drive that more quickly. And when you look at the question on the right, I think really goes to the perception physicians have about the product. And that is asked, if you, physician, had to start a phosphate binder yourself, which one would you take? 35% said Auryxia, the same as said sevelamer, which they've been using for 20 years safely. That is an important message around the perception they have of the product. Now we have to translate 35% of physicians saying they take it themselves versus the 6.5% market share. And we have to execute around that and drive revenue. Now let's transition to vadadustat, our phase 3 development product. And before we talk about dialysis particularly, just remind you, vadadustat's an oral HIF-PHI that's designed to stimulate endogenous EPO production with the potential to increase hemoglobin without the superphysiologic EPO levels that you see with current ESAs, injectable ESAs. And if you look at the graph on the left, you see this is an analysis from the CHOIR study, one of the seminal studies that was done that showed that increase in cardiovascular risk with the use of ESAs. And what this shows is it's about the EPO level, the EPO dose that you use that really drives that increased risk, not so much about the hemoglobin, though we know that's a factor in safety as well. What we know, and the whole thesis behind vadadustat and all of the other HIFs that are in development, is that we can drive a much more physiologic level of EPO, still drive hemoglobin, and do it more safely. So now we have to prove that in phase 3, and I'll just give you some updates on our phase 3 program in dialysis. Now, the core program for our filing is INNOVATE, which is a cardiovascular outcomes trial with a MACE safety endpoint, and we expect that between these two protocols to enroll over 3,500 patients or so, and I'm happy to report that in the conversion trial, which is the largest trial that we have, we informed sites in December that we were going to finish screening patients. They're screening the final patients. We expect it to be fully enrolled next month. And in the smaller new-onset dialysis trial, we've also informed them that we're about to stop screening. They are now kind of putting their last patients in, and we expect the last patients to screen in March. So this program will be fully enrolled in March, and we'll be able to read out data, we expect, dependent, of course, on seeing the MACE events in the first quarter of next year. Forward 2 is our study that's looking at switching patients. It's phase 2 study, looking at switching patients from QD dosing of vadadustat to TIW dosing, also looking at the hyporesponsive population, patients who are hyperresponsive to ESAs, an important subpopulation. We'll have top-line data from that before the end of this year. And then we are adding a new phase 3 study, EXPLORE, which is designed to explore different options for dosing for physicians, either titratable drugs you want in the label to have as many options as possible. We also want patient-reported outcomes data, important for reimbursement in Europe. We're initiating that study this year. We expect it to read out in the second half of next year. And then Trilogy 2, our three-times-weekly study, we will initiate now in the beginning of 2020, after we have forward data to inform the protocol. On the commercial side, again, the very unique opportunity. Commercial opportunity in dialysis really driven by the large dialysis providers through changes to their protocols, and they can very quickly switch large numbers of patients. And that was the reason for our deal with Vifor Pharma that we signed almost 2 years ago now. Vifor has a relationship with Fresenius Medical Care that allows them to drive utilization very quickly. They brought Mircera, the Roche ESA product, into that collaboration a while back now. And in 9 months, they had switched 90% of the Fresenius patients. Vadadustat will be the only HIF-PHI available through that joint venture to Fresenius. Another more recent event that is also a very significant positive for driving that that utilization. CMS published a final rule at the end of last year called TDAPA, Transitional Drug Add-on Payment Adjustment, which basically provides dialysis providers an add-on payment that encourages innovation. So they will be paid for vadadustat outside of the bundle for 2 years in order to drive utilization of innovative products for dialysis. This is a very important new event that's taken place, and we'll work towards taking advantage of that as we move towards launch. Now let me transition to the non-dialysis market. You know, I've talked a lot about dialysis. It's clearly a very important market as patients are treated, but it's non-dialysis where we think, as we think about growing Akebia, that non-dialysis is the place where we really feel there's the greatest opportunity to build the company. And, you know, when you look at these graphs that I have up on the screen, you know, as patients move towards renal failure, multiple laboratory measures become abnormal, whether it's phosphorus or iron levels or PTH. Patients become dysfunctional in these measures, and it's dialysis that allows them to get back into control again. The idea that you can treat these patients more aggressively, keep those parameters under control earlier in their disease process, the hope is you can delay the onset of dialysis, or if they go on to dialysis, that they do better. Remember, the mortality rate in dialysis is highest in the first 12 months, but the patients who are better controlled when they start do better. And this is a very small study that was done by Dr. Jeff Block in Denver, single-center trial that really demonstrates the potential here, where he gave patients Auryxia versus standard of care, regardless of whether they were anemic or had high phosphorus, to manage those parameters. Iron levels, phosphorus, FGF23, hemoglobin. He was able to manage those, and in this small trial was able to show that he was able to delay progression of patients to dialysis. It is a small study, but it's just demonstrative of what we feel we can do longer term with this product and with vadadustat as well. But today we have a significant opportunity in iron deficiency anemia for Auryxia. Right now physicians will use traditional oral iron ferrous sulfate first line to treat these patients, but they'll say only 25% of their patients get an optimal response. And they clearly agree that a better tolerated, more efficacious product is absolutely necessary here. And when you look at their perception of the product, they really do perceive Auryxia as a better product. If you look at the graph on the right and you look at GI tolerability, improvements in TSAT, which is a measure of iron iron available for making red blood cells, improvement in hemoglobin, in all of those parameters, more than 50% of physicians believe that Auryxia is significantly better than traditional oral iron. So once again, it's this kind of perception that we have to translate into adoption in the market. We believe the opportunity for vadadustat and CKD anemia in the non-dialysis population is even greater. With the TREAT trial, the CHOIR trial, all those studies that show the increased cardiovascular risk, fewer and fewer patients are treated or treated adequately with non-dialysis anemia. And you can see that in the graph that even patients with hemoglobins below 9 aren't necessarily treated the way they should be. What do physicians want? They want a lower risk of cardiovascular events. They want less variability in their hemoglobin levels. They want a lower risk of hypertension and more convenient dosing. The once-a-day oral dosing for vadadustat, we think, would be a significant advantage over injectable ESAs on approval. And once again, now we have to complete our phase 3 study to prove that we can deliver these benefits for patients. And that's the PROTECT study, designed just like our INNOVATE study, a MACE study, looking at cardiovascular outcomes. This study is enrolling very well now. We're targeting 3,700 patients, and we expect this study to read out by mid-2020. So when you look at the next 18 months, we really have a very significant number of catalysts ahead of us. The first half of this year, we expect the first phase 3 data to read out from our partners Mitsubishi Tanabe in Japan, then forward to before the end of 2019. Then as we enter 2020, we start to get to our MACE trials, innovate in the first quarter of 2020, protect by mid-2020, and then explore in the second half of 2020. So as you can see, we'll be very busy over the next 18 months executing and delivering on an important clinical program. So what's next? Obviously, we've just closed the merger, and we're deep into integration of the company. And from the time we announced the merger, we've been very clear with our employees. We have a very clear focus, execution on Auryxia sales plan and on the vadadustat phase 3 program. We'll continue to be driving those both forward. At the same time, the reason for the deal is the portfolio synergies that we have. We didn't talk a lot about the synergies between vadadustat and Auryxia during this presentation, but we're talking about iron deficiency anemia and anemia of chronic kidney disease. Two different indications, but obviously the impact of anemia is significant for patients with kidney disease, and we want to find ways to take advantage of those synergies in our portfolio, up to and including potentially co-developing the products together. That's work that's ongoing now, and we'll move forward with. And we will continue to look to grow our portfolio. As we drive our business plan forward and execute, we continue to increase the fact that we will be a partner of choice for people developing products in the kidney disease space with the organization we have, both the sales organization and the development organization. And I look forward to continuing to have business development as an important part of growing Akebia's portfolio. So, again, it's a new day for Akebia. We are very pleased with where we are today, with a product that's generating revenue in two different indications with significant growth opportunities still ahead of it, multiple clinical catalysts that start first half of this year through 2020, and we do all of this from a position of financial strength. Cash in the bank, growing revenue stream, collaboration revenue from our partners, that is a significant additive to our cash runway, and that cash runway bringing us into Q3 of 2020 so that we can recognize and see these clinical catalysts. And as a company, we have an incredibly clear and focused mission to help patients with kidney disease, and I look forward to continuing to update you on that in the future. Thank you.